Okay, delighted to be joined by Ellen Keane. We're live from the Sport Ireland campus in Blanchardstown. Ellen, how are you getting on?
I'm good, yeah. I'm a little bit tired. We were training this morning, so if I yawn, I apologise.
For you, I know this year, I've heard you mention in previous interviews, this is going to be potentially your last games, or it is going to be your last games. For you, I love that term, the last dance for Michael Jordan. Is 2024 the last year of you competing, or we see maybe another Europeans or World campaign?
Well, it's definitely going to be my last Paralympic Games. I think I'll have a little think when I'm home and see what I want to do. But I just want to go out in a high, and I want to be able to perform in front of my friends and family and kind of give them something good to cheer about. So that's why Paris will be my last Games.
Very good. Brilliant. If I was to go back to 13-year-old you in Beijing and tell you this is where you'd be now from your own personal success in your journey, what would you say, you know, as 13-year-old Ellen?
I think 13-year-old Ellen would believe it, but I think maybe 15-year-old Ellen wouldn't. I think there's just so many highs and lows that you go through in sport. And when you're a girl going through kind of teenage years and adolescence, your body's changing, you've got hormones going all over the place, and you're kind of still trying to find your confidence, and when I was 15, that's probably where I was at my lowest. So even just to acknowledge for anyone listening that it's important not to give up, and you are going to have those highs and lows, and especially in sport, when you're a kid you're constantly improving, and then you become a teenager and bam, you don't PB anymore, and I've come out the other end where I am starting to improve again. So it is, you can get there in the end. So I think 13-year-old Ellen would believe me. 15-year-old Ellen wouldn't.
Very good. Yeah, actually, the similar conversation with Orla Comfort is on a poster behind you on the podcast about she just couldn't break out of her injury cycle, and she was saying she was running quicker when she was a teenager. As you say, what gets you through the lows? Do you think about the highs, and do you think, oh, I've got to this point, I can get back to that? Or what's your mentality when you're going through a bit of a slump?
I think for me, I know I kind of have a gut feeling, and when I was 13, I'd always dreamt of winning a gold medal. So over the course of the years where I was struggling, it was kind of the thing in the back of my head that kept me going and kept me in sport. And it's just, it made me not quit. I might have maybe struggled a bit in and out of training, but I still turned up and I still was always there. So it's just a gut feeling I had to just keep going and keep backing myself and figure out a way of believing in myself. And eventually I got there.
Brilliant. You only posted on Instagram a couple of weeks ago. It's one of my favourite stories, I think, from Instagram. Gemma, who you met in Australia.
She's so cute.
Can you give the listeners a bit of background who might not know that story, the origins of meeting her a couple of years ago and where you are now?
Yeah, so this is the power of social media has. I guess people always hear of these awful stories that happen on social media, but for me, I'm fortunate to kind of only really had really pleasant experiences, and I think one of them is the story of Gemma. So when I was in 2019, I went over to Australia to visit a few of my friends, and this man messaged me to say that his daughter had the same arm as me, and is there any chance that I could meet her? And I was staying in Bondi at the time, and they were living in Sydney, so we agreed to meet up on Bondi Beach, and he didn't tell Gemma that it was going to happen. So she was just in swimming with her sister, and I rocked up and I was like, oh, hi Gemma, and she absolutely lost her mind. I think she was about 8 years old at the time, and she was actually doing a project on me in school when I was over, which was a complete coincidence. So I've kind of kept in contact with her and her family over the years, and even during lockdown and COVID, her dad messaged me to say that she was starting to really struggle with her arm, and her starting to get really insecure and hiding it. So like I zoomed her then, and we had a conversation, and I was just kind of encouraging her not to start hiding her arm, because once you start, it's really hard to stop. And then last year I was in Australia for the first time since, and I was racing against her, and then we kind of went full circle moment there, and then I saw her again this year. But she's just the sweetest kid, and she's so enthusiastic about swimming, and she's so confident. And the funny thing is, I think she's like 13 or 14 now. She's like a foot taller than me. She was tiny, I know, she's like a foot taller than me.
Brilliant. And was that the first time you felt the impact away from sport and what you're able to bring and do for people, and people like Gemma that don't have maybe role models to look up to, was that the first time you felt that impact away? Like, I always think of that Allianz ad that I think a number of girls reference on the Her Sport, the Her Sport Instagram thing they did a couple of years ago. Is that something that, was that the first time you felt your impact away from sports, say?
No, it's not the first time I felt the impact, but it kind of was the first time I realized how worldwide it can be, because like I was in Australia, I had no ties there. I'd never been there before. My Allianz ad wasn't on the TV there. And it was purely just because of social media and because of posting on social media that her dad followed me and found me. But I have had some really lovely experiences over the years of just even parents contacting me or adults contacting me. And I think for me, being involved in parasport, like I found my community in parasport, and I found people who are similar to me and look like me in parasport. And not everyone does sport, not everyone is a swimmer and has that opportunity or privilege. So that's where people find it. They find their community online. So I think that's what I'm trying to do a little bit more of now, is to be a bit more open and share stories of my arm, because there are people there who are looking for their people and they just can't find them. And I know what it feels like to feel left out and then to feel like you belong. So it's just so important to have your people. And even a really cute story I have is I was at a prosthetic fitting once, and there was a new mom there, and she had a newborn baby, only a couple of months old. Well, maybe not a couple of months old, maybe like over a year. And her baby, the nurse was like, oh, would you mind going in and just chatting to the mom and meeting the baby? And I was like, yeah, no worries at all. And I went in, and the mom was a bit nervous, and obviously because when you have a disabled child, it's not really what people are expecting. Like, the question people ask when a baby is born is, oh, is it 10 toes 10 fingers? And like, sometimes that's not the case. And I went in and I met the baby, and our stumps touched, and the baby burst out laughing, and she was just so thrilled because she could recognize that our stumps were the same. And then the mom burst out crying. So it was a really, really lovely, really lovely moment. And it's little moments like that that really do push me on. And it's just, I guess we're all human, we all have the same emotions, same feelings, and people are just a little bit scared because they can't see the similarities out there, and it's important to put it out there to the world.
It kind of goes back to that 2020 campaign of Can't See, Can't Be.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's probably something that we need to do more. And that story is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's just, so thank you for sharing for that. I do want to ask you a little bit about your training. You know, when you're this much experience, you're going into championships now soon. Your training, when you go in, how do you get locked in pre-race mentality-wise? Is it, I always love asking the question, is it more physical or a mental challenge? What do you think?
I'd say over the years I've gotten better at work. Like, my weakest point was my mentality and was my belief in myself and my confidence. And physically I was capable, but because I didn't believe in myself, the physicality wasn't there. So it, like, when it comes to a games, everyone is training hard. Everyone is working as hard as possible physically to be prepared. But it's the people who work on their mentality that are the ones that succeed, because you have to have no doubt. You have to have no fear. When you stand behind the blocks and you dive in, you have to be ready to go and not hold back. And the weight and energy it takes to have negative thoughts are so draining that they're just taking away all that energy. And energy you couldn't be putting towards positive affirmations and believing in yourself and pushing yourself. So I definitely worked on that during lockdown and during COVID, and that's kind of what put me in the position to be able to win that gold medal in Tokyo. So every day that I train now, I get excited. I nearly pump myself up for the hard sets, and I really push myself and challenge myself. And it's in those moments where I feel like I want to give up and I feel like I can't do anymore that I stand up and I take that challenge, because that's where the growth comes from and that's where my confidence really starts to come through.
Brilliant. And I love the way you look at that and how you changed their mindset, and it wasn't always the way. Did someone help you with that? Someone specific? Was there anyone, or just was it just maturity and experience?
I think it was a bit of both, a bit of maturity. I think I knew, as I said, the gut instinct of knowing what I was capable of, but not knowing how to do it. And I think for me, and being a para athlete, it was when I started to get sponsors and people outside of the sport started to believe in me and started to back me. And it was in those moments that I was like, if they believe in me, I should believe in myself. Like, it shouldn't take a company to believe in me, but that's what it is taking. And it's the acknowledgement of from the outside world that really started to give me the confidence and made me feel like I belonged. And then I'm a sucker for watching YouTube videos of motivational speeches. I'm not going to lie. And
I know exactly.
Probably do Absolute Motivation. That's the one. Like, I can quote you the Rocky whole. It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. Like, it's actually really funny. That's what I say when I'm in the middle of a hard set and I'm struggling. I just see over and over in my head. I go, keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. And it's the weight of the words that push me through. Like, it distracts me nearly from the pain. And I think it's just over time, the more I did that, the more I realized how much easier it was becoming to push myself. So it's just a muscle that I started to train more.
Brilliant. I would love to ask you more, but I can't. But I do want to ask you, what's next for you? Where do you want to go? Where can people keep up with you? And what are you going to do next beyond swimming?
Well, even beyond swimming at the moment, I'm just having a bit of fun online, sharing a bit more about my arm and how to live life with one hand. April is Limb Loss and Limb Difference Awareness Month. So I'm using the month of April just to share a bit more there. So you can follow me on my Instagram, which is keen_Ellen.
Brilliant, Ellen, thanks so much and best of luck.
Thanks so much.
Okay, delighted to be joined by Roisin Éireann live from the Sport Ireland campus in Blanchardstown. Roisin, how are you getting on?
Very well. Training's going really well, and you know, it's an exciting lead up into the Europeans in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, talk to you a little bit about your journey. Like, I've written a couple of bits down here. I know I feature on the page and the One to Watch series, but you were the youngest member in Tokyo. You still made 5 finals. That's very impressive. 5 out of 6 at events. What was that like for you as an experience?
It was definitely an unbelievable experience. You know, I was only 16 years old. I was so young when I look back now.
And you're only 18.
Yeah, I'm only 18. I'm not that much older, but I feel like I've gained so much experience, you know, in Tokyo, and then we've had a couple of worlds since then. So I definitely feel a bit more experienced now, and, you know, that makes it even more exciting, the idea of these competitions again. So, you know, it's an exciting lead up into the summer, definitely.
100%. I know I'll speak a little bit about last year's success, but it's interesting when you go to these championships, what do you learn, like, even away from Tokyo? And I know COVID and everything was such a scenario, it was very, very different for everyone. But to go in and be at this level of competition, what did you learn from that about yourself even, and not only your competitors?
I definitely think you learn every single time you get out to race, you know, even if it's just small little things, but you absolutely, every single time you get up behind the blocks, there's always something to learn, something to take away. So I try to always think of it that way, you know, if the race goes well or if the race doesn't go well, I always try to have something to take out and take back home with me. And then that's, you know, where you make the differences, where you take those things, take them back home, work on them in training. And I think that that's how you build and get faster every time you go out and race.
Brilliant. Is that something that, where does that mentality come from? Is that something you always have as a coach that instill that into you? Or I get the sense you're very driven from chatting to you, but that's so, like, you're so mature to have that already at 18 and at 16 in Tokyo. Where did you learn that?
I think, you know, it's something that my coach would have always said to me. So I'm training down in Limerick, so my coach is John Saranek, and he would always say, you know, there's something to take from every single race. And I think that's something that's really important, and it's kind of stuck with me. You know, if it goes well, there's always something, you know, there's always something to learn. There's never a perfect race. There's always something to, you know, keep striving for that one extra thing or that one extra bit that gets you that little bit further. So I think that's where that comes from.
Brilliant. Do you think at this level, like when you're competing in the Worlds and you won gold and silver last year at the World Para Championships and broke a world record as well, I won't not mention that. Is at that level, is it more mental or physical challenge, you know, to be competing? I even spoke to Ellen, she kind of gave a great insight about belief, but I won't skew your answer. What do you think? Is it more physical or mental challenge?
It's definitely a bit of both. You know, I think when it comes to the actual racing, it probably is more of a mental thing. You know, the physical is what you put in, day out in the pool, training all of the months and years. I think that's definitely the physical part. There's obviously a massive mental component to that, about getting up every single morning when the alarm clock goes off. That's definitely mental. But I think when it comes down to the actual racing, it's probably a very mental thing. You know, you put your body through much worse, so you're physically capable to do it 100%, but it's just about dealing with the nerves that come with racing. But then, like you said, like what Ellen said, being able to believe in yourself and believe that you're capable of doing what you want to do or achieving what you want to achieve. So I think when it comes to standing behind the blocks, it's definitely, and you know, throughout the race, it's definitely a mental thing of how far you can push yourself But there's definitely both components go towards it.
100%. How do you deal with nerves then? How do you balance it? I've a lot of younger listeners, whether it's swimming or different sports. How do you deal with nerves, and how have you learned to deal with them?
I think it's just about learning different things, you know, that, you know, help each individual. But for me, I love to race. So I think for me, every time I get up behind the blocks, I'm really excited to get out there and excited to race and, you know, hopefully do well. And I think that's where it comes. That's helps me to get over my nerves, is just the excitement to race and always having something there to work on. And I think having fun is another big part of it for me. So I like to be able to have a joke and a laugh in the call room, and that definitely, you know, eliminate some of those nerves that might be there. Just having fun with your competitors before you go out and then have to race them. But yeah, exactly. And I think that definitely lightens the mood and makes it that bit easier then, you know, so that I'm then relaxed and chilled out before I dive in to obviously give it my best in the race. So I think it's just about learning different things work for each person. But it's just learning how to, nerves are definitely a good thing, and you want to be able to learn how to use them as well. I think that's something that's really important. You know, everyone will have those few butterflies in your stomach, but it's just about learning how to use those nerves as fuel then to make you swim faster.
Yeah, 100%. A great chat with Jessie Barr, a sports psychologist here at Sport Ireland, and we were talking about music, and we referenced Michael Phelps' quote with the headphones on, Eminem pumping, hold up. Do you have any sort of pre-race routine, any sort of music you like to listen to, apart from cracking a few jokes? If you want to give us a few, your go-to online is there. But what do you like to do before a race, apart from all the fun stuff?
I think most people are quite the same. I like a routine. So, you know, I know exactly what I'm doing from the moment I get to the pool to the moment I race. You know, we have it planned out. So I know how far in advance I need to be at the pool. I need to do my dry land. I need to be in the pool to warm up, then suiting up, all being in the call room. So we have that down to science, down to the minute. So, you know, it's just following those processes, and that's what helps me then stay chilled out, is just knowing I'm going from one thing to the next, and I just have to get it all done. And then when I get in the call room, that's kind of my time to sit for a few minutes and relax. So that's, I think, very basic routine, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, 100%. And for you, like, you're 18 years of age, you're obviously 16 in Tokyo. What's it like trying to balance everything that a 16 and an 18 year old is going through with all this training and all these competitions, all the travel? Is it hard to balance everything? Do you still find time to socialize and do all the fun things away from swimming?
Yeah, I think that's really important, to be able to find that balance, you know, and, you know, not to let it overcome you. You know, you have to live somewhat of a life and make time for seeing your friends and different things like that. And I think that's almost acts as a distraction or something to do in your spare time. You know, it can't all be, everything can't always be swimming. And I think that's really important to be able to find that balance of, you know, not being too much in it. While obviously you're training every single day in, day out, as hard as you can. So, you know, it's just about finding the balance, I think, from the sides of, you know, every day-to-day organization is key in terms of, you know, training in the morning, then got a day of college, training in the evening. So being organized so that I can get all of those things done in the day as well, that's really important.
100%. I actually went to DCU, and I know in DCU there's the home of champions kind of banner in the gym, but I think at the moment UL is probably taking the home of elite sport at the moment. Like the athletes that are coming out of UL, it's just a factory at the moment, just the level, the facilities. I was down there last May at a conference, and I was just blown away by the campus. It must be such a pleasure to be training in such an incredible place.
Yeah, UL is absolutely amazing. You know, we've got really great facilities down there, and then for me, the swimming group we have, the high performance center that we have down there, is really great. We've got a really great group of swimmers, you know, there's about 20 of us, and really great coaching staff as well, so it makes going in the mornings a little bit easier, and it makes training so enjoyable every single day.
Yeah, what do you think about in the pool? It's probably a weird question. Like, I talked to Rachel Lee before, who has the record. She actually beat her husband to have the record for the Irish Channel, or the English Channel swim, solo swim herself, and she did like 9.5 hours. Like, Rachel, what do you think about for 9.5 hours? What do you think about when you're in the pool in a training and a race? Do you have time to think, maybe?
Definitely in a race, you probably don't have time to think. But I would say in training, you know, anything can go through your head. You could be singing some songs, or you could be just thinking of different things in your head. But definitely can definitely be boring at times, especially the longer we swim for, you know, that winter training when it's long and aerobic. There are definitely some boring sessions. But that's part of it, you know. you just have to accept that part and get it and do it.
Yeah, 100%. Look for yourself. Obviously, the success last year, gold and silver medals and a world record. What's next for you? How do you go into this championships, into the year that's in it? Obviously, Paris probably on your list to go. How do you build towards this year now? What do you hope to do in the future, even beyond 2024?
Yeah, it's definitely a very exciting year, you know, so we've got Europeans in a couple of weeks, and I think that'll be the first competition that I'm looking forward to, and hopefully can perform well there, get a couple of PBs there. That would be really nice, and that would be a nice way then to set up for this summer and hopefully an exciting summer.
Brilliant. For anyone listening, where's the best place to keep up with your journey and see what you get up to?
I suppose I post a little bit about it on social media, but yeah.
Cool, I'll link it in the description box. Thanks so many, Roisin, best of luck.
Thank you.
Okay, delighted to be joined by Nicole Turner, live from the Sport Ireland Blanchetown campus. Nicole, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Rick half for time, so I better keep it nice and quick. But look, big year ahead, European Championships coming up. What are your thoughts on the year in 2024?
Yeah, I think it's a year that's come around quite quickly. I think looking back on Tokyo being that year later, so technically, like, since Rio, we had 5 years for Tokyo and it went down to 3 for Paris. At the time, Paris seemed like years away. Whereas now when you look back, it's like the click of your fingers and we're already into another cycle. It's scary, but quite exciting. And I think now, yeah, with Europeans coming up in the next couple of weeks, it's our last international competition before the Games. So it will kind of just tell us where we're at and what work we need to be done then before July and August.
Is a bit of pressure then coming up to this Europeans knowing it's the last international competition, or are you trying to maybe put that to the back of your head?
To be honest, I'm trying to put it to the back of my head. Like, qualification wise, I've qualified. It's just about the selection process now. So like, realistically, I'm not aiming for times, but I think at the same time, like, it is a Europeans and it is kind of between this and Paris, they are the two most important meets of our season. So like, we are kind of set goals for and are expected to perform, but then I suppose looking on the other side, the big performance will be happening in Paris.
Mm. How do you deal with that pressure? And I spoke about nerves at Roisin a bit with Ellen, and kind of being able to perform under the big lights. How do you deal with that? Like, you're only 21. Like, you know, you're competing on the world stage. How do you find that? Like, it must be a lot. Maybe when you're starting, or how do you balance that now?
As the years have gone on, like, I think looking back on me and Rio, like, I didn't see the serious side of the sport at all. And some would say it was the best thing ever, and to be honest, it was. Like, everyone around me, the likes of Ellen, she was 21, she won a bronze medal in Rio, she was getting nervous, and I did not understand that. I was like, oh, I'll just go and have a bit of fun. I was offering her jellies, and she was probably like, get away from me, Nicole, I don't want to talk to you. But I think as you mature as an athlete, and the more and more you do it, it does become a lot more serious, but I think in a good way. Like, you do see how much the sport, like, it shows me how much swimming means to me, and how much I've put my life on hold for swimming. But I think looking towards Europeans now, like, yeah, there will be a bit of pressure, but I think if I'm honest, it'll be kind of an enjoyable pressure. Whereas the Games, then, not that it's not enjoyable, but it is kind of, it's what we've been training for the past 3 years.
Yeah, 100%. And actually, something I'd written down, you actually deferred school for Tokyo. Like, even dealing with that and, you know, all the pressures that come with being in your early 20s and, you know, there's a lot going on and you have to try to socialise. How do you balance that with your training and competing at the world level?
Yeah, that's another thing that, not as I've got older, not that I've struggled with, but especially, like, now that I'm an adult, being 18, 19, my friend's Friday night comes, it's like, oh, we go to the pub, are we going out? And, like, realistically, I can do it, but I'm up at 4 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
Oh, Jesus.
Realistically, I can do it, but if I have any wits about me and I'm sensible, it's a, guys, I can't, I'm training in the morning. And that is something that's got quite a bit tougher over the years. Like, it is worth it. I am winning Paralympic medals, I am going to major championships, but it is kind of hard trying to balance that then with still having a social life, still having my friends, but then prioritizing swimming. And yeah, I came out of school for Tokyo. So I left school in transition year and just trained. It was originally only planned to be a year, but then it turned into 2 years. So I think there was that kind of extra bit of pressure on me for Tokyo because I'd kind of put so much on hold and it was a bit of a gamble whether it was going to pay off or not, and it did pay off. but even like the likes of my friends and family, like the amount of stuff that they put on hold for me, it was kind of like I had pressure, not that they intended to put pressure on me, but like I had pressure knowing that this result is going to affect them as much as it's going to affect me as well. But that's kind of the stuff that when you race, you try not to think about it. It has to go to the back of your head, and you do just have to trust the process and think of what you're doing in that moment, and then you have to deal with the result afterwards.
100%. And what was it like when it paid off and you got a medal? That must have been nearly made it maybe a little bit extra special, obviously, with the year that was in it. Yeah. And we didn't even know if the games were on ahead, and all there was just so much messing, you know, before, not messing's the wrong word.
No, yeah.
But it was just so much going on. It just became just this wave of just uncertainty, like, yeah. for that to pay off in the moment, I think nearly probably made it extra special for you.
Yeah, 100%. Like, people say to me, and me and my parents as a collective, like, they were like, if you could describe it in one word, the word we'd all use is relief. I think the amount we'd put on, between the lot of my friends and family, the amount of we'd put on hold, it was kind of as when I touched the wall and looked at the clock. Yeah, it was amazing. And obviously having my teammates and my coaches around me then, it was that extra special because no one else was there. But coming home, the feeling was kind of take a deep breath and release it. It was relief. The amount that had gone on in that, say, 2-year block, and the amount I myself and my family had put on hold, it was kind of like, right, okay, it was all worth it in the end.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. What do you think about when you're getting up at 4 a.m. though? Are you thinking about the silver medal, or are you thinking about, oh Jesus, what am I on?
Absolutely not. Thankfully we only do it once a week. Our earliest start is 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning, Saturday of all days. But I think it is quite tough, but these are the moments that we kind of have to cherish. And we own, like, a motto that we all like using, if it was easy everyone would do it, and we're not everyone. So it is quite, like, it is quite nice knowing kind of the commitment that we all give to it. And we're all, like, at 6 o'clock in the morning, there's about 20 swimmers in the pool with us, so we all kind of are in the same boat, and we're all given the same kind of drive and motivation to each other. So it does make it a lot easier when you have nice people around you and people working towards the same thing as well.
Yeah, because it is an individual sport, obviously, but that team and collective, that's something you feed off the energy.
Oh, 100%. And I think swimming of all sports, like, 90% of our swimming, like, our heads in the water, we don't talk to anybody. So I think that was a moment in Tokyo especially that we kind of, what's the word I'd use? We kind of appreciated each other a lot more than we normally would. Like, when we went away for Tokyo because of the whole coronavirus and whatever, we were away from our families for, I think, 37 days. And by, say, 37, like, it was, like, you do get sick of each other. But it is kind of like we did thrive off each other, and because we didn't have that family and friends support, we all did make that extra effort to support, whether it meant some of us finishing earlier than others, but still keeping that morale and kind of motivation to get the others through to the end. So we are a very tight group, and it is, I think that makes it a lot easier as well.
What would it mean then if you are selected to go to Paris and to have your family and your friends? And look, it's such a close game. Yeah. It's amazing. I'm hoping to get over to Paralympics as well. It must be so special.
Yeah, I think it will be. Like, I think Rio was quite different. There wasn't that much support for Rio. And then Tokyo was very different. There was absolutely no one there. So I think Paris will be a very special games for a lot of us. As you said, it is very close to home. But then to have our friends and family to say that we didn't have them in Tokyo will make it a lot more special for us.
Brilliant. Best of luck. I hope it goes well.
Thank you.